So let's summarize the algorithms we were informally introducing before the break. So we could call it a gradient method. With inexact line search. Okay. We start choosing an initial point x0 in a rank, and we set the counter for iteration to 0. Let's k equals 0. Then let's consider a generic step which has optimality. If the gradient of f at the parent point of k is 0, we have found the stationary point, so we stop. Otherwise, we choose a direction, a descent direction, dk, such that its scalar product with the gradient of f at the current point xk is negative. Once the direction is chosen, we compute the step size tk, positive step size tk, such that the wall conditions are satisfied. Let's say better compute the positive step size pk, which satisfies the wall conditions. AJO and CY. Okay? And we can use a backtracking algorithm to compute such a step. Then we move from xk along the direction dk, we step tk to find the new point xk plus 1. We update the counter, k is equal to k plus 1, and we go back to step 1 to check optimality, stationarity for the new point. Okay? So, this is a description of this algorithm. Actually, it is a class of algorithms, okay? Because we are not telling how to choose a direction, okay? And indeed, in the backtracking algorithm for the step size, we have some freedom. We could take the midpoint, but we could also take a point which is two-thirds on which divide the current segment in one-third and two-thirds on the other side. And so there's some freedom also there. But the main freedom is for the direction. Clearly, we always know that minus the gradient can be taken. minus the gradient at the current point can be taken, for instance.
Okay.
So it's family of metals. I recall you again, as I did in the for the case with the exact line search, that the stop condition is unlikely to be ever satisfied, so that in principle, from a theoretical point of view, you are likely to generate an infinite sequence, and generally, since you need to stop, somehow you approximate the stopping criterion with a condition which can be satisfied. For instance, you ask, you would like the norm of the gradient at the current point to be zero, but somehow you can be satisfied if it is below some fixed threshold. Okay. For instance, on the example I showed you on Tuesday, I used 0.001. Okay. You could also use smaller values with 5 zeros, for instance. It's another common choice. This is 10 minus 3, another common choice is 10 minus 6. There are also other ways to approximate the stationarity condition. Somehow, for instance, you could stop if the progress in the value of the objective function becomes too small, or it keeps being too small for a consecutive number of iterations, or if the step starts to be, so the difference, the norm of the difference between xk plus 1 and xk is very small, and so on. Okay, there are many different ways to approximate to replace the stopping criterion. Okay. This is the way to approximate it, but there are also conditions which replace it when you implement the algorithms in practice. But now we do a theoretical analysis, so we have two options. The algorithm stops, in which case we have nothing to prove, because the stopping criterion is exactly saying xk is stationary, or we generate an infinite sequence, okay, which is the delicate situation. So I'm telling you what we can prove. So I'm showing you the convergent theorem, which states the following. So let's suppose that the above algorithm generates an infinite sequence. Have our assumption. F is bounded by 0, and we discussed this is not really a restrictive assumption. Why do we ask this assumption? Well, I just erased it, but we managed to prove that a step size satisfying the work condition exists if f is bounded by below. Okay? So this makes the step three of the algorithm well defined. Okay? We can perform it. Then we ask an additional assumption. So if f is bounded by below, if in addition the angle theta k, which is formed by the gradient of f at x k and the direction dk, is always greater or equal than 1/2 pi plus some fixed theta which does not depend on the iteration between 0 and pi 1 and 1/2 pi. So what I'm saying, this is the gradient, in this half space you have all direction d which have negative scalar products, this angle is 1/2 pi, we are saying that we consider an additional angle here, and all direction, we can choose all direction here. We change the direction, but we don't change this angle. Okay? So that it is not possible that the two, the gradient and the direction in the limit or somehow tend to be orthogonal. Okay? They're not becoming orthogonal as iterations go on. Well, if these two assumptions holds, clearly this must be for all iterations. Then we can prove that each cluster point of the sequence xk is a stationary point. A remark on the statement. As I told you a couple of lectures ago, this is the kind of convergent result we are likely to achieve in most of the algorithms we will be designing in the lectures. It's a theoretical result. When you go into practice, when you really go into practice, so you implement the algorithms, I would say that almost every time it's the whole sequence that converges. Okay? So when you implement the algorithms, you will not find strange things. Okay? You cannot prove that the whole sequence converges. You cannot prove it. You don't have the tools and it's not true, because you could build appropriate examples. But it is what happens in practice. Okay? Oh, unless the function is not bounded, you did not know, and so maybe the algorithm does not converge to any stationary point. An additional remark on the statement is, well, if we take minus the gradient as a direction, the assumption on the angle is always satisfied. Okay? Because if you take minus the gradient, the angle with the gradient is always pi. So this theta bar is always 1.5 pi. So this second assumption is granted for free in that case. Is it clear? Do you have questions? Okay, so let's try to prove this convergence result. It's the first time I'm making this proof in the previous year, so also in my old lecture notes, you will find a different proof, which was based on a very technical lemma, which I never proved, and the proof was an immediate consequence. Okay, I found out a better proof with even less assumptions, so we are making it directly. It's a bit long. It's not complicated, but it's a bit long. So. Hermitian condition is satisfied at each iteration, okay? So, let's write it in a different way. Hermitian condition can be rewritten this way. Minus C1 times TK times the scalar product is less or equal than F at xk minus f at xk minus 1. Okay? Just plug tk here in the initial condition, which is what we do. And you have this. Okay? Then we also have that this is a descent direction satisfying the condition that this scalar product is negative. So here we have the minus, so this is greater or equal than zero. Okay. Then we know that the scalar product between two vectors can be written as the product of the norm of the two vectors for the cosine of the angles which the two vectors form. Okay. So here we can replace this by the gradients, the norms, and the cosine of the angle. We call this angle theta k. Okay? So I just, this is our miser condition, this is the path that we are dealing with at the same direction. Actually, it would be this, but doesn't mind. This is enough for me. We rewrite the scalar product from this way. And now we have this thing. Okay. The method is a descent method. Okay? The value of f at xk minus 1 is less than the value at xk. Okay? Because we choose a descent direction and we make an appropriate step. Okay? Our visual condition tells you that you're doing a descent method because this is negative. Okay? So this is smaller than this. What I'm interested in, let's consider the sequence of the values. Okay? It's a sequence of real numbers. Which kind of sequence is it? You have a value, a new value. How's the new values with respect to the previous one? We just thought it's smaller. The next one is smaller, and so on. So this is a decreasing sequence. It's a monotone decreasing sequence. Okay. Is bounded by below, by assumption. So this is the decreasing sequence, but it's always greater or equal than some value. Okay, there's a lower bound on the decrease. What do you remember from calculus? You have a sequence, a decreasing sequence, which has a lower bound. There's a problem. These sequences, the sequences with this property, have a limit. Okay? So, this sequence has a limit. So, which is the limit? We don't mind. Because what I mind is this difference. The sequence has a limit. So consider this other sequence. Which is the limit of this other sequence? It's zero. Okay? Because it's the difference of two subsequent values of the sequence. So this goes to zero as k goes to plus infinity. Okay, so we have a well-known situation from calculus. We have something which is greater or equal than zero, which is less or equal to something else, which goes to zero. So, it has to go to zero. This goes to zero. Okay? Well, okay, what is that actually goes to zero? This is a number, cannot fixed number, cannot go to zero. This is a sign, it doesn't mind. Well, it could be tk, it could be one of these two norms, it could be the cosine. Could it be this term to go to zero, this last one? The answer is no. And the answer is no because of our assumption. Okay, I can tell you, I can also write you the trigonometric form. Let's write it fully. We have the cosine of this angle. This angle is greater than 90 degrees, okay, and it is bigger than 1/2 pi plus theta bar. So it's cosine is smaller because it's negative than the cosine of 1/2 pi plus theta bar. Okay. Which is a negative number. Okay. Actually, if you remember trigonometric formulas, you can show that this is minus the cosine of theta bar. Okay. It doesn't matter. It's negative. Okay? This sequence is negative and it's bounded by above by some value. It cannot go to zero. Okay? This term cannot go to zero. So it means that it is this part that goes to zero. This is a constant value, this cannot go to zero, so this goes to zero. Okay? Well, let's suppose we have the best thing for us. The best thing for us it would be that the gradient of f at xk in norm goes to zero. Okay. This is one possibility. If this is not true, it must be that this other quantity goes to zero. One of the two must be true. Okay. So, let's take the first case. And I show you that we are done. Okay. Then we will consider the second case, and I will show you that if this is true, then also this is true. Okay. So that all reduces to this case. Why this case leads to the statement, leads to prove, to check that each cluster point is a stationary point. Let's take a cluster point. Okay? Let's call it X bar. It's a cluster point. Okay? It means there exists a subsequence, let's say X, K, J, which converge to X bar. Okay? Allow me to simplify the notation on the blackboard and forget about the J and let's call it XK. Okay? I rename the subsequent K. Okay, just to write a little less. On my lecture notes you will find the precise notation in full details. But just to be shorter when we write, let's make it this way. Well, we know that the gradient is a continuous function by our choice. I told you at the very first lecture. Okay, f is continuously differentiable. The norm is a continuous function. So, the norm of the gradient at xk goes to the norm of the gradient at x bar.
by continuing. Okay? So, if it goes to zero, and at the same time it goes to the norm of this vector, the two must be equal. And so, the norm of the gradient must be zero. Okay? You have the same sequence and two limits. The two limits must be the same. We have this. We are done. There's a unique vector whose norm is zero, and is the zero vector. So, the gradient of f at x bar is zero. And so, x bar is stationary. So, indeed, this is the way you prove that sort of theorem. You prove that this sequence has a limit, and the limit is zero. Okay? It's the way you prove, you generally prove this sort of result. Each cluster point is a stationary point. You prove this, and you are done. So, whenever we do it again, I just prove this and I will not tell you the details afterwards again. So, if we are in this equation, we are done. It's easy. So, since we are unlucky, let's suppose we are in the other situation. Dk times the norm of dk goes to zero. Okay. And once again, let's consider a cluster point x bar and a subsequence xk. Okay? And we take this condition on the subsequence. It's true for all k, so it's true also on the subsequence. We have both this and this. Okay? Now we exploit the curvature condition. Up to now, the curvature condition has never been used. Okay? The curvature condition is satisfied. So we have that the gradient of f at xk plus tk dk scalar product with dk is greater or equal than c2 times the scalar product of dk with the gradient of f at xk. Okay? Now, allow me to divide both members of this inequality by the norm of dk. Okay? So that we can take some d hat k to be the unit vector which gives you the same direction of decay. Okay. So here we could write, dividing by that norm, this for this vector. Why do I use this? Because these are all vectors whose norm is 1. So they are in a compact set. Eventually taking a subsequent, these vectors go to some points. Okay? You remember, when you have a sequence in a compact set, the sequence admit at least one cluster point. Okay? So, eventually taking a further subsequence, we can suppose that dk goes to sub d bar. Okay? in Rn, and the norm of d bar is 1, so it's not the zero value. Now, dk tk dk goes to zero, also the vector. This is the norm of this vector. Okay? So the norm of this vector is going to zero means that this vector is going to zero. So now we have a lot of information which we could exploit here. Okay? We have this inequality. We take the limit as the subsequence k goes to plus infinity. The gradient is continuous. The scalar product is continuous. So we can take the limit. Let's see what happens to the left hand side. Xk goes to x bar. This tk dk goes to zero, so this goes to x bar. And d hat k goes to d bar. So this goes to this scalar product. Okay? Gradient of f at x bar, scalar product with d. And clearly, on the right hand side, you have the same. C2 times the same scalar product in the limit. So you have this inequality. This inequality can be written this other way. 1 minus C2 times the scalar product is greater or equal than 0. Now, this becomes relevant. Okay. Up to now, we used the fact that C1 is smaller than C2 to guarantee the existence of a step size satisfying the world conditions. Now, we use this other requirement, that C2 is less than 1. Because if C2 is less than 1, this is positive, so we are saying that this scalar product is greater or equal than 0. Okay. Could it be positive and not negative? Well, so sorry, could it be positive and not 0? Well, how are these scalar products? We have been choosing the same direction with this property. So, all of these are negative. Okay? So, the limit, which is this one, must be less or equal than 0. Okay? So, greater or equal than 0, less or equal than 0. 0. This must be 0. Okay. Now I need to take the last step. Where can I write the last step? Okay. We don't need this anymore. We need this. So I can do the last step here. We exploited this. We exploited this to get this. Okay? Now, I want to show you that this goes to zero. Okay? How can I do this? Okay. We know that this scalar product goes to this scalar product, so goes to zero. Okay. This can be written how? This can be written the norm of the two vectors, so the norm of the gradient, times the norm of this vector, but this vector is unitary, so the norm is one, times the cosine of the angle. The angle is theta k, because if you are doing the angle between this and this, or you are doing the angle, so this is the gradient, and this is dk. When you make, when you shorten dk in such a way that it is unitary, the angle does not change. Okay? You're simply taking a longer or a shorter vector, so it does not change. Okay, let me do multiply this inequality by minus one. Okay, I told you earlier that we had this. Okay, this doesn't mind if it's this exactly quantity, it's a negative number. So, if I switch sign, this is greater than this, and here I can write then this is greater or equal than sine theta, the sine of theta bar times this norm. Then theta bar is between 0 and 1 pi, so its sign is positive. Now, this goes to 0. This is greater to or equal to 0 and less or equal than something that goes to 0. So, this goes to 0. Okay? This goes to 0. This is a constant value, so it doesn't affect convergence. So this norm is going to zero. And we are back to the previous case. Okay. So it took some time, but we proved that these algorithms gives you convergence. So we have 5 minutes, so I should tell you something interesting about this result. Okay, so
The proof that I used till last year proved something different. Proved that
you could prove that a particular series where you have the cosines and the norms, particular series is finite. So it means that its generic element goes to zero. Okay? And you exploited the Hermitian and curvature condition, but you needed an assumption on the gradient of f. More, a bit stronger than continuity. A stronger form than continuity, maybe we will see for some other algorithms. But in this case, clearly, since this is bounded away from zero, and this has to go to zero, this has to go to zero. So I generally skipped the proof of the technical lemma, got this, and the convergence proof was almost just this, something like this line, no more than that. But you can do it a little better. My second remark is about the gradient method with exact line search. And then we stop. If you remember, we proved that if the gradient method with exact line search converge to some point, then that limit point was a stationary point. And I told you, well, you can also prove this kind of result. Okay? How do you prove it? You exploit two facts. Okay. The first is the following. If you do the exact line search, the corresponding step satisfies the curvature condition. Okay? But does not necessarily satisfy the Hermitian condition. Okay? So you cannot do this proof. Okay. Otherwise, the gradient method with exact line search would be a particular case of this. It's not exactly a particular case of this, but you can do the proof once again. Why? Well, if you do the exact line search, compare the value you get with the value you get if you do the inexact line search. Okay? Well, and let's call it this way. You do the inexact line search satisfying the Wolf conditions. Okay? Well, clearly you get this. Okay? So when you do FK, minus xk, you're getting something which is smaller because you have this, then okay. This part is exactly the same. Also in the exact gradient with the exact line search, this sequence is monotone decreasing and bounded by below, so it has a limit. This goes to zero. So, this goes to zero, and you can do exactly the same proof. Okay, so if you want to prove that the gradient method with exact line search has this convergent property that each cluster point is a stationary point. You argue this way. Curvature condition is satisfied. You don't have Hermitian, but you have this inequality, which is what is enough in the proof. Okay, so with this proof, we prove both convergence for this method and the good convergence results also for the exact line search. So we are done for today. On Tuesday, you will be having Professor Bevilacqua. He will speak to you about a gradient method for linear systems. Okay. And his gradient method would be a bit different from this. Okay? It will perform a particular choice for the direction and will do exact line search. It's called the conjugate gradient method. And you will use it to solve linear system of linear systems. You will discuss this on Tuesday and on Friday on the additional lecture from 9 to 11. And then at 11, I will come back and show you how the ideas Professor Bevilacqua developed for linear systems can be used in general to provide a different kind of gradient. Okay, so this is the plan for the next week.
So have a nice weekend.